Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. Still weird to say. With you as always, Steve Haller. And joining me as always, Andy Pregler and Christian DeGuzman. What's going on, guys?
Not much. We're taking a break so that Steve doesn't have a mental breakdown while the Bills game is going on.
Yeah, anyone not watching the live stream, I'm decked out in Bills gear and staring at my right monitor because... thankfully, we just went to halftime so I can pay attention to the podcast, but the Bills are tied with the Chiefs at halftime, and I am a happy man.
I'm not going to lie, as a neutral in this space, I'm rooting for points. I like points. These are two really fun football teams, and as it really pains me to say, but the Bills have really turned themselves into a fun football team. Like for all the shit that we give Syracuse for, and like Syracuse fans that we constantly say, like, oh, you know, being an actual New York sports fan is terrible. None of the New York teams are actually good. The Bills are the one that play in New York. They are actually very good. And there's a ton of evidence to show that this is not going to slow down anytime soon. So like there's a part of me that wants the Bills experiment to succeed because it validates a lot of what football is doing and trying to do now, and that also validates like what we talk about in Syracuse football, like what they should be doing. However, Steve, the other half of me goes that there is not a folding table large enough to handle what would happen if the Bills were to win the big game. I'm pretty sure the entire Eastern Seaboard would just be like table flipped out of the actual continent and just sailing into the Atlantic Ocean.
There would be no Niagara River. It would just, Lake Erie and Ontario would just turn into one at that point. Like, whatever crater was created by people going through every table in Buffalo would just bypass the whole landmass and, you know.
I will tell you what will happen is that that will happen. And then if the Giants don't hire Brian Daboll to become their head coach, you will not see MetLife Stadium burn down faster. Basically.
And this is a stadium that both the screw jobs that are the Giants and the Jets play in.
This has really been a for those that are not watching live and are listening or rewatching the next day, this has been a very entertaining game. Like there's no way around that. What I will say is that it does seem as though it's going to come down to the last possession. So if you have a rooting interest in this game, I'm just really sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, you know the stat of today, Andy, right?
I don't know. There's been a lot of stats that have happened that I don't know.
So every single game this weekend has been decided by a game winning field goal as time has expired by the away team.
Oh, I don't know if Steve Sark
Let's
can handle
go,
that.
Buffalo. Hey, a win is a win. If my heart implodes and I'm laying on a cot somewhere tomorrow, that's fine. Survive in advance.
Survive and advance. You know who's not going to be doing that? The Syracuse men's basketball team.
This is what you tune in for, ladies and gentlemen. It only took us 5 minutes to get there.
Yeah.
I didn't really want to make, I mean, you guys accidentally set that up on a platter for me. For those that didn't know, somehow Syracuse played Duke in what is the biggest game of the Syracuse Orange schedule. What is the third or fourth biggest game on the Duke schedule?
Is it even that at this point?
I mean, All things considered, yes, if only in name. This year, absolutely not. The Orange lost by 20, 79-59 to the Duke Blue Devils.
And honestly, it should have been more.
Yep. This is a game where the Orange played badly. Duke didn't even play that well. They were just the better team by in every facet of the game. And I think the thing that we should probably talk about first, Buddy Boeheim and Joe Girard, when they combined 2 for 19 from three.
That's good, right?
Very good. What are you talking about? It's incredible.
You're not going to win any basketball game when that happens. Christian, look, we've talked about everything that's wrong with this team. At the end of the day, if Buddy and Joe are going to come out and play like that, the Orange aren't going to win any games, period.
And it wasn't necessarily all their fault. Yes, they both missed a couple of good looks. But once again, it's another team showing you a perfect blueprint of how to play Syracuse. It's basically leave a guard on, and Jay Bill has pointed this out, you leave your best guard, your best defender on Joe and Buddy, and you say, don't help on anyone else. Don't slide to double anyone else on this team. Make the other guys on the team beat you before Joe and Buddy beat you. Because those guys are the ones that will beat you when you start helping off them to double. And unfortunately for Syracuse fans, the Duke guards were glued to Buddy and Joe's hip practically throughout the entire game, meaning that they couldn't get any rhythm at the beginning of the game. So by the time they got open shots towards the halfway point of the game, they just weren't falling because they weren't in any rhythm to hit any of those open shots.
Right, and this is playing tight on two guards, including one who we know does not handle pressure well. And even half-court pressure or, you know, tight defense, Joe tends to get a little agita, and it seems like he did. It's weird to see, because rewind this, because we talk about the Duke game. There were two games that happened this week. Somehow, in the time being a flat circle thing, the Clemson win was also this week, where it looked like towards the end of that Clemson game, a couple things started to click, and you know the Orange were looking decent, pulled away. One, I think, 90-something to 70-something. I'm really good at specific scores.
It was 91-78.
Hey, I was close. I had the you know, powers of 10 working. But, you know, you started to see a couple things click into place there, and then the wheels just fall off against Duke. And, I mean, that is a talent gap between Clemson and Duke, but at the same time, like, if Syracuse is going to be or have any modicum of success, they at least need to not look like a pile of hot garbage against Duke. And that seems to be the consensus of what we look like.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot that we as a fan base recognize that Syracuse was going to struggle with when it came to Duke. What I don't think we realized was that Duke did not even play their best game of the year, and still was the better team by a pretty wide margin. And I'm going to include myself in here. There was always this voice in the back of my head that said, well, a run in the ACC tournament could probably put Syracuse in a position because the ACC is not very good this year. There's, at least as constructed and as playing right now, this team does not have what it takes to compete with a Duke in terms of combating that man pressure. It's just really apparent. Like, again, this is the moment where I make the comment about how Steve has seen more basketball than I have, even because I was a fan starting in 2011. This is not a Steve is old comment, just an Andy did not follow basketball in the pre-2011 days. I know.
12 minutes? 11 minutes in. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. I've never seen a Syracuse team that didn't have somebody that could take a team's best defender on one-on-one. I've never seen that. And I feel like even
14, 15, maybe?
Even then, like, Scoop Jardine wouldn't necessarily win every game, but he was crafty and annoying to the point that he could win a one-on-one, and you still had somebody like a CJ Fair who was raw, but maybe it's not a great one-to-one example, but I think that's what's really missing on this team is somebody that you just give the ball to and say, beat your guy one-on-one, no shooting, just get to the rim in front of them.
I'm thinking about the 2014-15 year, my freshman year, when it was Rack at the five, and then you had Benajay at the three still, with McCullough, and then Cunha and Caleb Joseph up front.
That actually might be the closest comparison. But even then, we saw flashes from Benajay where he would like slide into the one by default. Yeah. And Boeheim had to begrudgingly make that move full time the next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a weird year. Just thinking about that year was funky. But hey.
Mm-hmm. But like, and I think Steve, that's a perfect example. This year's team is not funky. This year's team is just bad. Right. And I think that's the difference that Syracuse fans are starting to make as a whole, is that there's it's really hard to find a silver lining with this team, because like you said, that team, it was clear that the pieces didn't mix, but the pieces could become something. I don't necessarily think that there's that kind of upside with anybody on this year's team who's going to be sticking around.
Right. You saw that 14-15 team. You saw, you know, even watching Benajay, Cooney, Roberson, Joseph, any of them, you could tell that moving forward, there was going to be an increase in talent, or an incremental increase in talent. And yes, I know the Joseph thing. He was on the list. But we'll go BJ Johnson, because whether it was not in Syracuse, he did improve.
Yes, he did.
Significantly. But the... like all of those guys, you would see them and you're like, yeah, he's raw, but there's something, and next year we'll look forward to something. And in my brain watching this team, all I'm seeing for the future is more of what we're seeing right now, which is mildly worrying, to say the least.
I think that that's 100% accurate, and I think that that's really where we are. We're having a moment as, you know, as a collective, as a fan base. Okay, now I'm going to officially say, Steve, you are older than Christian and I. You've seen a lot more Orange fandom. I can't remember a fan base this apathetic. Like, it's moved beyond, oh, this team is bad, I don't want to watch. It's just moved into, I don't even care if they pull off the upset. Like, this, it's the hope and the life has been really sucked out of this team. And I know there's a lot of other things going on in the world right now that contribute to that. I'm not going to say it's just because Syracuse basketball is bad. But it seems really ill-timed that Syracuse is having its deepest valley as a program to coincide with what's going on in this moment in 2022.
Yeah, it's... there's so many different ways you can go with this, and yet none of them... It's... Okay, we're Doctor Strange looking at all 14 million possibilities right now. And there is one way out of this. We just don't know where the hell it is.
out of the 44 million possible outcomes, there is one. And we are all, none of us are Tony Stark and know which way it is yet.
No, I'm hoping at the end of this season, Boeheim looks at the camera and just points so that we know. He gives the one to the camera so that we know we're in the right timeline. But I'm not holding my breath here.
This is the timeline. He, like, during the middle of a game, I'm not sure which game it is, he looks at the camera, holds up the one, and in the very next defensive position, Syracuse is in man.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, that's amazing.
That would surprise me more than what actually happened in Endgame. Like, I honestly think Syracuse coming out in man would be more surprising than the first time I saw Tony Stark get all of the Infinity Gems, Infinity Stones on his gauntlet. I mean that very seriously.
It's so sad but true. It really is. Oh, God. That's amazing.
Wow, I was going to say, it's taken us 1 week and we've already turned this into the Marvel podcast.
Which reporter, because I know I don't have the balls to do this, which reporter will have the balls to at some point this year as Boeheim? Will he consider making a switch to man?
James, if and only if he has decided to firmly entrench himself in Syracuse full time and he is just going to become the new Mike Waters, who's going to bug Boeheim for the rest of his career.
Now, no, there are two eventualities there. It's that, or he's fed up with us and he's quitting the site, and that's his parting shot.
James, please never leave us. Please never leave us.
Very true.
But yeah, this is, I really do, Christian, to your point, like, Boeheim's comments are also getting, not unhinged, that would be the wrong word, but this is the most unkempt I've seen Boeheim. Like, typically, when he's having, like, a tirade or he's going on, like, a moment or having one of his meltdowns, it's not really a meltdown as much of it is, like, I'm going to use this opportunity to make a point because I know I've done this long enough that I know how to move the media around. It really is starting to get to the point where he's just going up there and he's just, and, like, I think James has actually said this, maybe in our Slack, maybe on Twitter, it seems like Boeheim is just as miffed as the rest of us as to either the players are not translating what's happening in practice into game situations, or the players are not improving in a way that he expected them to improve based off of, you know, his experience of coaching and seeing a player who looks like X turn into Y. It's like these players are just staying at X and they're not moving. They're not progressing at all. And I think what we've seen so far of Benny Williams, unfortunately, falls into that category. Like, Christian, I know that you've been on that, on this train for a while, but even in the limited minutes that Benny's getting, he does not look like he knows what he's doing out on the floor, and that's really concerning for a lot of different standpoints.
I think he's getting it on defense at the very least. Like, on offense, that's a different story, which is the concerning thing about Benny, considering the hype that he got at the beginning of the year and, like, during his recruitment and everything. That, I think, is easier to fix for Benny than it is the defensive issues that have plagued the rest of the Syracuse team. The fact that he is most likely, at this point, going to be sticking around for a bit, because he has said multiple times online that and on radio shows that he is not planning on entering the transfer portal at the end of the year. He's planning on sticking around for Syracuse next year. There is, while it doesn't look great right now, he definitely has the athletic skill set to eventually get to be that offensive player that Syracuse has envisioned him to be offensively, and maybe not so much. But I do agree with your point, Andy, that there's definitely something that is not translating in practice to the floor during games. Like, I think there's probably some point in practice where it's going really well in practice, but it's just not translating to actual games, which is probably where that frustration is coming from for Boeheim. Or it's just that practice is also going horribly wrong, which is equally just leaking out onto the floor. Because both of those could be like the flummox type that you can say that Boeheim has been in some of these post-game press conferences.
Yeah, Boeheim post-game press conferences. They used to hold such a wonder, and now it's just he's so pissed off.
I was there for the Bud Poliquin rant that he had in 2016 after a Pittsburgh win. That was a legendary one. So good.
Yeah, it's the problem is we're like we've gone to depths where the rants just aren't making sense. Like sometimes he's saying things that you're like, I don't know if that's what I saw on the court. But okay. But here we are.
I mean, that's the thing is that we're so far into the season. I don't think that we can expect reasonable changes in the key areas that matter. What we like can wins? Expect is that the wins, defensive efficiency. I think
defense
in general. I think the one thing that's kind of important to call out is that I think it's KenPom, where the Orange are like a top 30 squad when it comes to offense and a bottom 300 squad when it comes to defense. And I understand that you can have one part of the floor that's better than the other. The discrepancy there is just far too large to make up, and we're clearly not making up any more ground at this point. Mm-hmm. So it really does become, and Kevin posted the article this week about it, where Boeheim really just kind of has to treat this year like a lab season, the way that we talked about Syracuse football in 2020, where it's at this point, who fits well with who, which players can potentially give you that X factor in a single game, because running out the same lineup each week is not going to change anything at this point. I don't necessarily know if there's going to be a consistent week-to-week answer to that. But I do think that the Jim Boeheim only plays six players narrative might have to change by the end of the year, because at some point in time, we're going to drop to below 13. We're going to get 13, 14 losses on the table, and finishing sub 500 is going to be guaranteed. And once that happens, I don't understand why at that point you're playing the top five guys for 37 minutes a night when you obviously need to be planning for the future.
I just thought of the other one possibility and the 14 million possibilities on how this season turns around. Bam turns to the camera, he puts up the one, and then off the bench comes Patty Casey.
Yeah.
Walk on magic.
Oh, boy. You know, I think, yeah.
That's all you have
just,
to say.
No, I just have vivid memories of, like, Justin Thomas in the six overtime game, and like, that was walk-on magic. If we're resorting to, no offense to Patty Casey, but Patty Casey in the middle of a like 13 loss season,
it's a Braden little Bayer, different. Braden Bayer in 2018.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
Yep.
This has been fun. I'm glad we were able to make that somewhat interesting, because.
Well, yeah. Speaking of interesting, I'm just going to say, let's look at the rest of the Cuse men's schedule. Because
yes.
let's go full beat ourselves up mode today.
Do we also at some point want to talk about Jeff Goodman's comments earlier today?
I think we'll see those.
Let's hold those for next. Well, actually, I dove into it in the comments today, too. So,
why don't you guys enlighten me? Because I have no idea what you're talking about.
You haven't
about.
Heard? Oh, this is a good conversation, this, Steve. I'll let you take away this.
I went to a brewery today. I wanted to have fun.
We were losers and stayed on Twitter.
So Field of 68, Goodman,
God, who else is on there?
Rob Doster, yeah. And Gottlieb, their After Dark segment. They posed, is it time for Boeheim to retire? With the statement, or the answer, yes. Is it time to force him out? And I haven't seen the clip, but that's what they discussed today.
Oh.
So that went down.
I mean, okay, without diving into the comment section, and without diving into Twitter threads, what I'm going to assume is that there's a large portion of the Syracuse fan base that says that Boeheim has earned the right to end things on his own terms. There is an equally loud, maybe not as large, but equally loud group that says that's not how college sports works anymore. Syracuse does not want to fall into the abyss of other programs that let their coaches do that and now don't make the tournament every year. Which I would assume both points are actually pretty valid. Like when you think about, there's never been a coach like James Arthur Boeheim. However, other coaches very similarly to him that have ended this badly have tanked their programs.
Yeah.
What I will say is the same argument that we had about senior Dino Babers this year. The Syracuse Athletic Department is not exactly the most cash flush power in Power Five. And I would argue that getting a coach of Jim Boeheim's quality at $2 million a year is probably 60% of what they'll have to pay the next guy. And even if you, so your options are promote from within to keep the savings and promote an unproven head coach takeover for a Hall of Famer coming off of a disastrous season and expect this new face to turn things around or send the program into oblivion, or you have to open up the wallet to an extent that we're not sure that they can to hire a coach who we know can probably do it, but still has a chance to blow it because the roster doesn't actually have that much talent on it. Did I nail it or did I nail it?
I think one of the things, I'm not sure, one of the things that, well, I agree with all of those, Andy, is the finance thing is the big thing. I think one of the things that I haven't watched the full clip. I just saw like Steve said, what the tweet said. But the big thing that I think some people have said, I think Kevin said this or someone else, is that there was so much of a legacy behind Boeheim, and I think it was Goodman actually in a quote tweet, there's so much of a legacy behind Boeheim of him single-handedly making Syracuse relevant while football wasn't, that precedent is still there also, that you really can't force out Boeheim because of what he means, not just to the basketball program, but to the school in general as well.
Which now, is one at of the same time, though, you're talking about a school who just didn't force out a five-time national champion lacrosse coach.
Yeah, but the thing, while I agree with that, lacrosse isn't at the same level nationally.
No, but at Syracuse, it's pretty damn close.
Yes, and I get that. That's the thing in basketball, though, is that it's more nationally relevant.
Right.
And that move won't send ripple waves to the national world.
Yeah.
The same way that it did through the lacrosse world when that happened. And even in lacrosse, people saw writing on the wall, and some people kind of also dismissed the fact that it was a force out by Syracuse.
But tell me, on the other end of this, if you are looking at the Syracuse program over the last seven so years, is there not the writing on the wall? Can you not see that writing on the wall where the mediocrity of the regular season being subverted from the argument by the success in the postseason?
I think the big thing, like in the differences between basketball and lacrosse, is that in lacrosse, the postseason success wasn't there.
Right.
And while for Syracuse, and especially on a national scale, with how big March Madness is, getting to the Sweet 16 is such a big success, especially when you're such a low seed in that big of a field.
Right.
That it kind of helps with the program visibility.
See, I see Arizona post Lute Olson. I see Okie State post Eddie Sutton. Like there was, and you know, those programs to a degree have rebounded from that. But like when both of those guys retired, it was just a drop off to nothingness for a good bit of time.
And my counter to that is that Steve, I was too young or not born enough yet to know what you're talking about.
I mean, like, not to make this conversation dark, but like the one thing that basketball does not have that lacrosse did have with the Gary Gates situation was that lacrosse had a legitimate legal student safety, not even scandal, legitimate assault on another student that took place by one of the prominent members of the program that, again, I don't want to relitigate everything that happened there, but what was fed to the public was the head coach coming out and willingly keeping that player on the program even after all of the signs pointed to an assault taking place. Even though, like, I understand that if you dig into the situation, it seems as if there was a lot of legal machinations happening that did not allow Syracuse to be as aggressive as one may have hoped they would have been. That being said, like, this is a student safety issue, and the head coach was put out in front of the media to fall on the sword for that. And while Boeheim has had his scandals, while Syracuse basketball has not been above reproach in any way, shape, or form under the Boeheim tenure, there has definitely been issues that have popped up over time. During this particular period of Syracuse not being good, the program has been on its best behavior. And for all of the warts that we want to give Boeheim on the Fab Mello scandal and all the things that took place before then, since then, the program has been clean. And I do think, based off of how we saw John Wildhack talk about Dino Babers during the COVID year, and how Wildhack's focus during the COVID times was that Babers kept the football program safe, he kept the football program running, he kept morale up, I do think that there's something to be said that in Wildhack's position, while the on-the-court results might not be there, Boeheim's ability to kind of hold everything together behind the scenes on the basketball program and keep the basketball program out of the national spotlight when it comes to scandals does have a ton of weight into how Jim then gets to decide his legacy. And I do think it's also like really important to call out that when John Wildhack was a student at Syracuse, Jim Boeheim was the head basketball coach.
Yeah.
Like, we are this is not a situation where like the boss is like removed from the program, or the boss is like this executive that comes in to clean it up. The boss at Syracuse is a Syracuse fan and has been a fan of Jim Boeheim for most of Jim Boeheim's tenure. And like, I don't want to necessarily say that that means that Wildhack is biased. I'm just simply pointing it out that if anybody is going to be cognizant of legacy, of how the optics look to Syracuse fans and to Jim Boeheim, it's going to be the dude who has bled orange his entire life and literally was a student when James Arthur was a head coach here. Like, I don't think that we're going to get anything dramatic from Wildhack. I think if we get something dramatic, it's going to be from Boeheim. And Steve, to your point, you brought up some really good names. Like, how many of those guys, there's a couple that come to my mind, are coaches that just go, you know what, I'm just too tired for this shit. Like, this is, like, at the end of, instead of having to be forced out, they voluntarily, either behind the scenes or very publicly, were just like, I can't, like, losing sucks.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how to fix this, and I'm just done.
That was both of them, was, like, it just, the quality of program precipitously dropped at the end of their tenure. It was, like, and very similar to what we're, you know, the jury is still out on whether we're seeing this year. Again, we're talking about this because we talked for an hour about Syracuse. For both of them, it was like, fine. Oh, crap. And it was like, maybe a year, maybe 2 years of oh, crap. And it's like, all right, well, okay, it's time to hang it up now. So yeah. Here we are.
Potentially, oh, crap, time to hang it up. Steve,
postface. Jim Boeheim is a living legend. It's not like anybody's trying to trash on Boeheim here. Like, he's done more for this program and more for this city than most people can even think about. But there has to be a time that the question is asked, and here we are.
Yeah. There's also a time. Modern, like, we talk about it every week during football season. We haven't talked about it as much in basketball. Like, NIL and the transfer portal have fundamentally changed the sport. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that Jim doesn't want to learn the changes. I'm just saying that the sport has changed, and doing things the same old way is not always going to work. And I think that that might be the question that's posed to Jim of, are you willing to change? Or do you want to keep running things the same way? And I think that that conversation actually sets the tone for whether or not he comes back or not. Because if he's willing to change, maybe he gets a couple extra years because he wants a couple extra years. If he's not willing to change, maybe we get more of the, you get one more year, you have to do the farewell tour, and we get, and I posted this in the Slack. I think it's very serious. If the team's going to be bad, they need to sell against something. Selling against Jim Boeheim's last game against Pitt, last game against Louisville, last game against X, Y, and Z is probably a better sales tactic than come watch mediocre ACC basketball.
Fair.
Steve, do you have the rest of the Syracuse men's basketball schedule up in front of you?
Oh, boy. I just did, and I closed it out of. I know we're at Pitt next.
I do, yeah.
Christian, so, what are we looking at?
So, next couple of weeks, at Pitt next, and then home versus Wake. At NC State, home Louisville. And then a weird stretch of at DC, at VT, and then versus DC.
Hey, let's get our hopes up before we head into...
Before we head into a meat grinder, because February 19th is BC, Saturday. Yep. The next Monday, home versus GT.
Nope.
Wednesday, away at Notre Dame. Ugh. Home on Saturday, February 26th, Duke. And then Monday, at Chapel Hill.
And Bay, I'm going to be playing six February guys 19th, that entire week.
February 19th to 28th. That is a 9-day stretch of playing 5 games.
Yeah. And yes, BC and Georgia Tech are not good teams, but that's a lot of basketball in a short span of time.
That is a lot of the balls being basketed.
Yeah.
Man. Like, again, I've been saying it all season. The ACC stinks. We know this. But man, the way this kind of feels like the Syracuse football talks that we have, where it's not necessarily that the teams are tough. It's that the way that the schedule is set up is going the exact opposite way that Syracuse needs it to go in this time and place.
Yeah. And in all honesty, when you look at the schedule, you have 12 games left. And like when you napkin math it out, you're looking like easy, just, you know, okay, this should be a win. You're looking at like 5-7.
Yeah.
Like Pitt, BC, Vatech, BC, Georgia Tech. But beyond that, who are you guaranteed to beat? Maybe State?
But even then, that's a road
yeah,
game.
And it's away, so yeah.
Ugh. I was gonna say, do we want to talk about the happy things or the sad things?
Both.
Okay.
We didn't do enough sad things.
I was gonna say we're gonna go sad and then we'll transition to happy. We're gonna pivot off of men's basketball. Oh wait, it's halftime ish. I'm still getting used to this whole podcasting thing, which means that we get to talk about our wonderful friends at Home Field Apparel, official sponsors of the News Magician Podcast. They make very comfy collegiate throwback apparel. Steve, if you're watching on the live cast, Steve is wearing a Tulane Green Wave shirt underneath a Bills, not Stephen Diggs jersey, but no. Number 14 Bills jersey. It is Sammy Watkins. Oh, Steve just loves his number 14 wide receivers. Boy. Love him. If Homefield made a jersey shirt with the number 14 and a Buffalo thing, Steve would buy it.
Shout out to House Divided Bot also for absolutely destroying News Magician earlier this week.
The Tulane Syracuse Crunch House Divided Bot. Mm. I want that on a Home Field t-shirt this week. We would buy that. We would buy the crap out of that shirt.
Absolutely.
If you didn't see this week, they're bringing back Big News Saturday, which is when they drop a new school every Saturday. This week it's Cincinnati, your college football playoff darlings that everybody was rooting for. I'm going to buy the Cincinnati baseball t-shirt at some point in time because I like baseball and I like the University of Cincinnati. It's a school that I considered going to at some point in time.
I own the Akron Zips or the UC Irvine Zot baseball shirt, so.
Let's go. The
home field and baseball shirts are a phenomenal combination.
They are fantastic. Make sure you head over to them, check out their wonderful stuff, and check out the Syracuse collection there. We talked about the non-Syracuse collection because all of us have seen it, worn it, but this is your first show and you don't know what home field is. Go check it out. It's really great. They just get vintage college sports. And if you want some vintage college sports feel, turn to lacrosse, where both men's and women's had multiple preseason All-Americans, as things should be. Let's do the bad news first. Syracuse women had 7 preseason All-Americans. That is not bad. One of them is out for the year. Christian, what happened?
Unfortunately, Emma Ward, who was one of the best freshmen of the year last year, stepped up so many times in attack, especially after Emily Harris, Chuck, and Megan Tyrell went down with injuries.
God, I forgot that too.
Oh
yeah,
my gosh.
Just injuries, 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 and then more injuries. And now we have another injury to the attackers for women's lacrosse in Emma Ward, who, again, was just incredible as a freshman last year. And again, unfortunately, out for the year with a lower leg injury, kind of like, again, as the other two, and Harris Chuck and Megan Carney also suffered both lower leg injuries last year, and now it's Ward with a lower leg injury last year, or this year. Ward had 43 goals, which was third on the team, 30 assists, which was second on the team. So that's 73 points, also second on the team last year. So very good. She was an impact player inside lacrosse All-American honorable mention. Unfortunately, again, out for the year. Big loss, because you never want to lose that much talent, especially when you're trying to gun for a national title once again.
Now, that said, the amount of talent on this team, the aforementioned Emma Ward, as well as Emma Terrell and Megan Carney, were named honorable mention All-Americans.
Yeah.
That's three. For those counting at home, that's three honorable mention All-Americans. And then the first and second team honorees, again, national All-American, best in the country, Sam Swart, Sarah Cooper, Megan Terrell, and Emily Harshchuk. Not too shabby. I mean, we played last year pretty darn solid without two of them, including, you know, the first team honoree, Emily Harshchuk, and one of the...
Megan Carney.
Megan Carney. Yep, I was going to say one of the Megans, but
yes. It's so confusing because you have two Megans and two Carneys, which just makes things incredible. And then you have two Emmas and Tyrell and
You have two Tyrells. It's
confusing. But long story short, they're all good. Harshchuk, Megan Tyrell, and Sarah Cooper were all first team All Americans. Also, so ha.
Yeah,
and, the and team is very good.
Sam Swart was a lowly second team All-American.
Oh, how darn! You're only in the tier of better than most everybody else in the entire country.
You're only the 16th best person in the country. Sorry.
The women's lacrosse team is going to be so good this year.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah.
The men's team should also be pretty good. They had four preseason All-Americans. None of them are hurt as of yet. Obviously, I'm not trying to jinx it. I'm just saying injuries happen, particularly to Syracuse, because it's not fair.
Not the truth.
The four, this is the tough thing about the men's lacrosse side, is that obviously the talent is more evenly distributed throughout the country and the conference. The four preseason All-Americans for Syracuse: redshirt junior Tucker Dordovich, he earned third team; senior Brandon Curry; redshirt senior Brett Kennedy; and sophomore Owen Hills were named honorable mention selections. The
fan account.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm still team Owen Hills. So.
Yeah. They're pretty good. The team's pretty good overall. Obviously though, Christian, as we talked about last week, the ACC is just absolutely stacked in lacrosse. So while the men's team is going to have to do some work in order to kind of fight their way up in there, when does the season start? Because I know it's coming sooner than I want to believe.
It's coming up pretty closely. I was just counting how many players Syracuse play on the first team inside lacrosse's All-American preseason pool, and I think it was six. Chris Gray, Pat Kavanaugh. We all know what Pat Kavanaugh did to Syracuse last year. It could be considered R-rated. Connor Mahar, Roman Pugdoli for North Carolina and Maryland, and then Brett McCarr for Maryland as well. So I think that's five, actually. Yeah, five. I don't know, six, because also Colin Schellenberger. Oh, yeah. The entire first team attack for inside lacrosse's All-American preseason team is all ACC: Chris Gray, Connor Schellenberger, and Pat Kavanaugh. Okay, so the men's kickoff have opening faceoff on February 12th against Holy Cross. And then it doesn't get easier, because next week is Maryland.
That team.
That team.
So... yay.
So Maryland, who has the honor of having former Syracuse player Logan Wisnowskis as their star attacker. Logan Wisnowskis was a freshman at Syracuse before transferring to Maryland. He is originally from Maryland, from the all-acquainted Dematha High School. I believe he's from Dematha, which is one of the better programs in Maryland. And he's on the second team, and will be leading that Maryland attack. Yay.
This sounds like gonna be a tough schedule, as per usual.
No, really, what makes you say?
You know who also has a tough schedule? the Syracuse men's football team.
And I don't think people realize that yet.
We will dive into it at another time and place, because we are going to pivot to happy conversations. We are being happy because you know why? Syracuse football recruiting is doing some good stuff. This week we had a transfer come into the program. Wide receiver CJ Hayes transfers in from Michigan State. Hayes is a wide receiver converted to safety who's looking to convert back to wide receiver. He only has 1 year of eligibility left. The assumption is that he is going to be the classic Dino Babers wide receiver transfer, come in and start immediately. So we'll see how that goes. Hayes, I believe, is... Oh, I got to look up his stats again, but I believe he's
6'4"?
6'3". I think he's 6'2".
6'2". He's got a little bit of height to him. He seems like a tradition more of an outside guy than a slot guy, which makes sense given where Syracuse's roster is sitting at the moment. But it's an interesting get. He's a big body.
6'2", 205.
Yeah, he looks like he has what we're looking for. Steve, I know that you were really interested in this kind of move. If he's going to play wide receiver, it makes some sense. But also safety... It doesn't hurt to have some safety depth on that side of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, if he had experience shifting to safety, and per Michigan State's website, I guess, their bio, he played only on special teams, or primarily on special teams.
I was going to make that caveat. Like, I don't think he took a defensive snap. I think he just played on special teams as a safety.
So that's the thing, is like, he wasn't a good enough wideout to stick at Michigan State as a wideout and then switch to safety and didn't play a ton of safety. He seems to be an athlete to be able to, you know, make this maneuver. The question will be what Syracuse's yet to be hired wideouts coach will be able to make of it. I'm never going to turn down, especially a grad student transfer from a Big Ten school.
The last one that did that did pretty well.
Fair.
He happens to be from the same school, actually, as well, that CJ Hayes transferred from as well. So you know, that worked out pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like a position that we need depth in is something that he's going to fill. Personally, if Damian Alford and company don't overproduce a 6'2", 205 transfer that was playing safety last year, I think we may have other problems. I would like to see him in the rotation. But I don't. If he ends up being our primary threat, either Michigan State missed something completely, or we're in a lot different shape than we thought we were at wideout.
Yeah, I think what we're really looking at is that a lot of the more veteran guys are fighting for the same kind of slot role. Like we know what. I don't know if Sherrod Johnson has, like, he's listed as a redshirt junior on the team. I'm assuming. Oh, no,
he's playing at Florida International, so that's not going to help.
I was going to say, he transferred. We've got Devon, we've got Devon Cooper, who is a redshirt senior, so his eligibility is out.
He's out.
Yep. So we're looking at Courtney Jackson, Nate Wellington.
Walk on.
Yep.
Not going to play.
We are looking at Damian Alford.
Outside, good.
Yep. We're looking at Umari Hatcher.
Outside.
Good.
Who's listed at 6'3", but 170 pounds.
Soaking wet with a center block tied to him.
Steve, you can't make me laugh that hard while I'm writing something. We've got Anthony Quealy, naturally.
Outside.
Yeah. And then did Kendall Long transfer, or is he still here?
Who is that guy?
I think he's a walk-on of some sort.
Yeah, sounds like a walk-on. And then Ethan Fish. So Trevor Pena has obviously gone.
Is Trevor Pena gone? Did he enter the portal?
I don't believe so.
I think he was entered.
No, you're thinking of running back.
Yep. Yep, I'm thinking of the running back. Not
Cooper Lutz.
Yes. Cooper Lutz. The opposite Trevor Pena. Pena was the wideout that could play running back, and he was the running back that could play wideout.
There we go. Now you get why they're stuck in my head. He's 6 foot and inside slot guy. So moral of the story is that, like, I'm going through, we've got a lot of slot guys. We do not have a ton of outside guys, and I would understand the idea of bringing in somebody with experience just to say, this is the measuring stick for the freshman. Like, if a freshman is better than him, great. Let's play the freshman.
Who are the freshmen?
Aronde Gibson and Javonte Williams are not this incoming freshman class you're talking.
The incoming freshman is
I was going to say, Aronde Gibson and Javonte Williams, I'm still pretty high on, too. So
yeah.
We'll see.
Although those guys look pretty good. So your incoming class, excuse me, everyone, is Donovan Brown, who actually, not a bad rating, 85 on 24/7.
Nice. Yeah.
And is that it? Cornell Perry? No, Cornell Perry's playing DB. D-back.
Did Dom Foster come in as a DB as well?
I think he did. So yeah, we are playing with, we have one wide receiver coming in from the recruiting class.
We'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
The good news is there is one more recruit we should talk about. We have a top two announcement coming from Elijah Clark, who is a Yes. He tweeted that out yesterday, that the top two announcement is coming soon. For those that don't know, Clark is a friend of Deuce Chestnut's, which is really the point that why Syracuse fans are freaking out. But he is a four-star defensive back who is looking to leave the Rutgers program. It is widely expected that the final two will be between Louisville and Syracuse. I think the Deuce angle is not to be underplayed. I think it's really interesting.
And I think it's important to say that they're not just friends. They were high school teammates.
Right.
So, and yeah.
Now, do we know, is Clark, on Rutgers' website, he's listed as a DB. Is he a safety or a corner?
I am honestly not sure. Let's see here.
There's a very big difference between coming in and sitting behind Garrett for a year or coming in and being an immediate contributor at safety.
He is just listed as a DB. Let me see if I can pull up some game notes and see if he was on a 2D anywhere.
I'm going to, while you talk about that, I think one of the interesting
24/7 has him listed as a cornerback, so.
That could be good.
So this could be a, hey, come on in and sit behind and learn from Garrett for a year, and then when he's gone to the NFL,
you and Deuce just run everything.
Right.
It could also be like, not to get too conspiracy theory here, but what if, like, Garrett's obviously a good corner, but we obviously saw him take a step back this year. Garrett's got a big body. What if they're looking to turn Garrett into a safety rover type?
Yeah, I was gonna. Like Garrett as a rover could be very, very interesting.
Yeah,
like not inside, necessarily.
And from the NFL standpoint, more of an inside corner. I could see that. Like that's not a bad look, especially if Tony White shifts to more of using that rover as an inside corner, or if he has a couple of tweaks in his system as to what he wants to see him as. That could really be a viable option as that new newfangled nickel package inside corner.
Yeah, I just want to point out that like none of that is I am not sourcing that story. I am not like that is just literally just a random thought that popped into my head. But based off of the players that are on the roster, based off of the talent that they're looking to recruit, there's not an obvious plug and play there. And Steve, you and I have talked about this forever and ever and ever since before even Christian got on the show. Like Syracuse has to get the best 11 onto the field at all times. And it's up to the coaching staff to figure out what that alignment with the best 11 is.
Right.
And that seems like potentially an interesting fit to make that happen. That's all.
Yeah.
Okay. Just
compelling argument.
I didn't see Clark run out too deep. So
it's so probably why he's looking to transfer.
Yeah. So we'll probably assume that he is a cornerback, like as was previously said.
Either way, it's nice to see Syracuse going after big-time transfers and being in the mix for them. They've obviously done a nice job of hitting the portal since saying that they weren't going to hit the portal with 3 weeks left to go in the season.
It's Nick Monroe just going to work.
Nick, we needed guys. Okay, fine. I guess I'll do it.
Yeah.
Nick Monroe, Thanos, I'll do it myself. There's the last Marvel reference of the day.
I'm sitting in awe of Josh Allen's arm. Sorry.
Is he doing Josh Allen things again?
Yeah, when we're done with this thing, just look up the last pass he threw, and it's, yeah. It'll be all over things.
I'm sitting in awe when one of the autos trying to slide down the sled down the Krause Hill right now.
Mm. Oh, yeah, don't do that.
Have you ever done that in the auto costume, Andy?
I have never done that in the auto costume. I will say that when my family came to visit me my senior year, we watched somebody slide down the Krause Hill wearing a Syracuse Snuggie, expecting them to be wearing clothes underneath the Snuggie. And
oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, oh, no.
So your family got the whole, hey, how do you do?
Oh, they learned the Syracuse party school reputation very quickly.
Oh, ain't that the truth?
There you go.
Yeah. So on that note, let's let Steve get back to Josh Allen doing Josh Allen things.
One more happy note we do want to talk about. DeAndre Kerr. Well,
yes.
Sad note first. Things. Yep. Sad note first. DeAndre Kerr is no longer with the program. He was officially signed with TFC2. Likely with TFC 2 as a homegrown player. So unfortunately, Mac's streak of draft picks ends strictly on the technicality that Kerr wasn't eligible for the draft because he wasn't Generation Adidas. So yeah. Toronto bypassed that whole thing and just signed him as a homegrown. Still awesome that they sent another person to the league. Sucks for the program that they're losing their, you know, easily most prolific attacker.
This is where Chi-Chi comes in handy.
Yeah, yeah. Getting all your Paganos belong to us. Will be coming in handy this year. Bring FM slightly west and put them up on the hill, and we'll be good. But yeah. Beyond that, so congrats to DeAndre Kerr for signing with Toronto. Awesome for him to go back home and start his professional career. The other thing would be that Syracuse has officially signed, I cannot pick up his name, the reigning NJCAA Player of the Year.
Lorenzo Boselli.
Uh-huh, that would be his name, because Christian's better at notes than I am. so he is the reigning JUCO Player of the Year and should be joining from Richland College, not Richmond, very different. But
yeah,
we'll see him coming into the Orange program. So, you know, we lose one, we gain one, and we'll see where it all leads us as we get into the Mac yeah. talk. Our version of Maction, if you will.
At JUCO this year, 17 games for Boselli, 21 goals.
Not bad. So the last time we had a very prolific JUCO come in was Benny Polk, and some people, if you follow Syracuse men's soccer, should, you know, enjoy the fact that he came from a couple miles down the road at HCCC and came here and did very good things in a very good year for Syracuse soccer. Hopefully Boselli does the same thing.
The unfortunate thing for Andy is that Polk was drafted to the Portland Timbers.
I know. It's okay. I wish all Syracuse players success. It's great. Whatever. I got to play. Instead of watching the Duke game live yesterday, I got to play footy wearing my long sleeve Seattle Sounders jersey that I just bought. It made me very happy. That's where I'm going to end the show.
Nice.
Ladies and gentlemen, and everybody else who's listening, thank you so much. We really do appreciate the support as we transition into being the new official podcast people. For those that are watching the live stream, thanks for spending some time having us as your second or third screen option to this amazing NFL game that we're going to let Steve get back to.
If we're second or third screen, that's an honor.
I know. Listen, I'm just assuming that we're on one of the screens. Make sure that if you are watching live, you follow us on Twitch, you subscribe to our channel, make sure that you can keep up to date with all the great things that we're doing. If you are listening to us on one of your favorite podcast platforms, whichever it may be, like, subscribe, make sure you give us a 5-star rating. That's the good stuff that keeps us going. And if you are just watching us on the News Magician website, thank you for coming to the site. We really appreciate it. We'll have lots of great content coming this week, not just around basketball. I need to write my football quarterback EPA article that Kevin told me to write last week. So there will be football talk on the site this week, too.
I have to decide what I'm writing for those also.
Yeah. Football talk in the middle of January. Who else wants it? Here we go. Go Bills. Go Orange.
Go Orange.
Go Orange.